From NPR Music, this is Alt Latino. I'm Felix Contreras. And this time, I'm not sitting in a studio in Washington, D.C. I'm sitting on a park bench in Havana, Cuba. This particular park bench is near Havana Vieja, the oldest part of this historic city. You can hear the sounds of traffic in the neighborhood right behind me, as well as a handful of tour buses bringing lots more tourists into this area. I was invited to be part of a gathering of journalists from throughout Latin America and the U.S. who write about Latin music. And while I was here, I decided to open up an Alt Latino Havana Bureau to continue to pursue for you, dear listeners, music of all stripes from this island nation. You know, I don't have to tell you that we are witnessing history in the making as the governments of the U.S. and Cuba cautiously approach each other, relaxing the tense relationship that's built up over the last 59 years. Change is palpable here in Havana. Longtime residents tell me they see more and more Norteamericanos walking the city's historic district, as well as strolling along the Malecón, the long seawall that faces the U.S. just 90 miles across the Strait of Florida. Now, to be sure, Cuba has been economically and politically isolated from the U.S. since the early 1960s. But what we're going to do this week is show you how the musical connection between our two countries was never interrupted. You know, if you skip around through history, you'd see that connection in things like Cuban sailors taking music to New Orleans in the 19th century, or pianist Bebo Valdez's love and admiration for American jazz pianist Bill Evans, while he was music director at the famed Tropicana nightclub here in the 1950s, all the way through the 1980s when Cuban music was licensed by European labels and shipped into the United States. So there has always been an intercambio, or a musical exchange, in which ideas flowed in both directions. And we start that look at the musical exchange by going back to the early 1960s, just after the revolution in 1959, when a young Carlos Alfonso is just starting to play piano. His band Synthesis is celebrating 40 years this year of mixing rock, jazz, and Afro-Cuban folkloric music. And I sat and talked in a performance space at La Fábrica del Arte Cubano, an arts collective located in an old cooking oil processing plant. He says he remembers very clearly when his musical world opened up beyond Cuban music.
One day a guy shows up to school and he had something that was totally new to us. But it wasn't from the U.S. It was the Beatles.
Carlos Alfonso said he wanted to hear more of what he called a glorious sound. But he said that kind of music from Britain, and especially the U.S., wasn't exactly encouraged by the new guardians of culture, especially after Cuba and the U.S. broke diplomatic relations. So, he says many people developed a curious workaround to not exactly break the law, just bend it a little.
We discovered that we could pick up the signals of many radio stations from Florida with just a small homemade antenna and a little hard work. We could get all kinds of music from stations like WQAM, WLCY, and then eventually we pulled down television signals and heard the music on television music shows.
And what he did hear coming from the U.S. actually sounded kind of familiar.
I have a theory about the music from our two countries. I have seen that almost everything comes from Africa, including rock and roll.
As an example of his theory, this 1955 hit for guitarist Bo Diddley is actually based on the Cuban clave beat. Bo Diddley called her nanny go to make it pretty baby on Sunday go. Alfonso explains how the shared history of the slave trade influenced music in both countries.
I hear something very similar in the rhythms from Africa and the rhythms of rock and roll. For example, gospel music. The slaves in the U.S. were not allowed to keep their drums, so gospel vocals have a lot of African influence and the call and response vocals. And here in Cuba, we didn't have the great vocal tradition like gospel in the U.S. But when you put the vocal tradition of the United States with our African beats, we're getting close and closer to our common roots.
My grandma and your grandma were sitting by the fire. My grandma told your grandma, I'm gonna set your flag on fire. You're talking about henna, 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 henna. I go Waiko Ande, Giacomo Fino Anane, Giacomo Finane.
Songs like this, Aiko Aiko by the Dixie Cups, might very well have been one of the songs Carlos Alfonso heard on the radio in 1965, full of Cuban-influenced syncopation as well as African call-and-response vocals. And it came from New Orleans, a city that had so much Cuban influence in the 19th century, it was considered by some to be the northernmost port city of Cuba. Carlos Alfonso eventually put a band together that reflected that synthesis of cultures from Cuba and the U.S., and he called it Synthesis.
In the 1980s, we started to mix the music of traditional Afro-Cuban Yoruban music, the music of our ancestors, and the folkloric rumba. And we mixed it with all the other experimental music we were listening to at the time. Bands like Yes and Emerson, Lake and Palmer. It was a glorious source of inspiration because that music didn't have a traditional rock and roll structure. And it inspired us to experiment on our own.
With a 40-year anniversary of his band coming up this year, Carlos Alfonso is mostly philosophical these days about how the passage of time has changed attitudes about music and culture here in Cuba. He points out how one of his first musical influences symbolically ended the internal culture wars that dominated the island during the bulk of his career.
No se veía bien.
The revolutionary perspective was that anything coming from the imperialist was not to be tolerated. But times change, and now we have a park and a statue here in Havana that is dedicated to John Lennon.
Ya todo eso pasó.
This is a track from Ancestros, the groundbreaking first album from Synthesis. It's called Asoñé. I'm Felix Contreras, and you're listening to Alt Latino from NPR Music. This week, it's a special show about my recent trip to Havana, Cuba, to explore how the flow of music between our two countries never stopped, even as diplomatic relations ended. Tucked away on a side street in Central Havana sits ground zero of Cuban music, the recording studios and offices of EGREM. In 1964, the Cuban government nationalized the music industry here, and EGREM became the country's national record company. It's an acronym for Empresa de Grabaciones y Ediciones Musicales, or the Enterprise of Recording and Musical Editions. Our first stop is the Master Tape Vault. And for someone like me, who has been a fan of Cuban music since I was a teen, it is an incredibly special moment. Our guide, Pileta Reina, explains why.
Essentially, all Cuban music artists pass through these studios. Now, there were others, but when you're talking about professional quality studios, it was right here. Orchestras, vocalists, even some artists from other countries. Everyone recorded right here, in these studios.
A quick check of tape cases near where I'm standing finds a master from a session by a Cuban musical institution, the Charanga Band Orquesta Aragon, a band that dates back to the late 1940s. I see another pre-revolution session featuring the great vocalist Benny Moré.
Castellano, qué bueno baila usted. Castellano, qué bueno baila usted. Cosa buena, mira cómo baila. Y el pelo
There was a lot of music recorded here after 1964 and included folk singers like Silvio Rodriguez, who influenced generations of singer-songwriters throughout Latin America.
Ojalá que las hojas no te toquen el cuerpo cuando caigan, para que no las puedas convertir en cristal.
Then there is the music from the 1970s and beyond, proof that Cuban music did not freeze in time like the old cars that still roam the streets. Juan Formel's pioneering and extremely popular dance band, Los Van Van, recorded right here.
Salí de La Habana, con destino a matanzas. Quería saber del mundo, de la rumba, de la Columbia.
Also here in the vault is just about the entire catalog of the groundbreaking Cuban jazz band Iraquere, led by pianist Chucho Valdez. Now fast forward to the 1990s for some of the most popular music ever to come from these studios. The classic mambos, cha-cha-chas, and boleros of the Buena Vista Social Club, the all-star band made up of veteran Cuban vocalists and musicians who unleashed a worldwide Cuban music phenomena when their album was released in 1997. The album was produced by American guitarist Ry Cooter, and it's yet another example of the long-standing musical exchange between the U.S. and Cuba. Now take a minute to imagine if all the historic recordings made in places like Sun Studios and Stax in Memphis, Motown in Detroit, Capitol Records in LA, or the old Columbia Studios in New York, if all of that was actually recorded in one place. Then you get a sense of just how important these studios are to Cuban music, and they're still being used.
Coming.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm not ashamed to admit that when I'm finally invited into the main studio, I'm overcome with emotion to be standing amidst the spirit of so many of my musical heroes.
Es un tesoro, te juro.
Ay, Felix, tan bello.
Thank goodness the vocalist Daimé Arocena happens to be in the studio recording some vocal tracks, and she helped me regain my composure so I can enjoy the moment. A lot of the music made in the legendary Agrem Studios here in Havana, Cuba, may soon be heard again. Last September, Sony Music announced they had struck a deal with Agrem to digitize and license the music. Like this track, Por Tu Voz, by La Sonora Matancera and everyone's favorite Cuban vocalist, Celia Cruz.
No sé qué tiene tu voz que fascina. No sé qué tiene tu voz tan divina. Que en mágico vuelo le dará el consuelo a mi corazón. No sé qué tiene tu voz que domina. Pone en brujo de magia mi pasión. Tu voz se adentró en mi ser y la tengo presa. Tu voz que extrañará. es el divino poder que tienes mi bien para enternecer. Tu voz que susurra de palmas, ternura de brisa. Tu voz que estrinara de sinsonte en la enramada. Tu voz que es gemir de violines en las de madrugada.
I'm Felix Contreras, and you're listening to an Alt Latino special report from Havana, Cuba. Now we move from the analog history of EGRM recording studios to two Estudios Caseros, our home recording studios, that are helping to move Cuba's music into the digital age. Our first stop is in a leafy upscale suburb called Vedado. Percussionist Gisi Garcia sits in a sunlit, open-air apartment at her MacBook workstation as she works on some new tracks. She explains that some of the music is made from digital loops she created by sampling other albums.
Esto es una maqueta. De hecho, la voz que está puesta son como loops que cogí de diferentes músicas que tenía ahí, background y eso, y unos raperos.
She purchased the computer during a recent tour of the U.S., and it is one of the benefits of being able to travel outside of Cuba to perform music. In fact, she and many other younger Cuban musicians are the beneficiaries of a societal change in which travel is an option, and there is a much more relaxed view of music that comes from the U.S. on the part of the Cuban government. She studied music at one of Havana's renowned music academies where she learned to play jazz, but not the rich rhythms of Afro-Cuban dance music. So she joined a dance band when she got out of school. Gisi Garcia says that's when it all came together for her, the combination of her jazz studies and the rich Afro-Cuban polyrhythms she learned on the streets and in dance clubs.
Cuban musicians have this thing in our blood that we are born with. It's that mixture of Afro-Cuban and Spanish, and it makes our sound distinct. It's like it's embedded in our souls.
In 2012, she finally started her own band and called it Gisi and Banda Ancha.
We are a jazz band, but we mix it with electronic, reggae, funk, Afro-Cuban with the DJ. And I'm very proud that each of the members brings their own experiences and sounds, and that allows us to experiment so much.
Like so many Cuban musicians before her, Gisi says it was a musician from the U.S. that inspired her.
In about 2002, I saw a video of jazz pianist Herbie Hancock, who was a musician who I admire and adore. And on the video, he had a DJ in it. The mixture of the sounds fascinated me, and I said, someday when I get my own band, I'm going to do something like that.
Thank you. GC Garcia says that she hopes that the recent political changes will allow more people to hear the new music being made by an entire generation of younger Cuban musicians.
La nueva es la nueva visión de Cuba y es como que
what is happening in Cuba now is the new Cuban vision. Many people think Cuban music is the familiar traditional music, but our band and many others are representing the new sound of Cuba in different styles and genres, not just jazz. And the whole world should hear all of it.
Music like this, GC and Banda Ancha's cover of the Miles Davis tune, Tutu. You are listening to All Latino from NPR Music as we explore the long-standing musical relationships between the U.S. and Cuba. My last stop during my visit is the historic Central Havana neighborhood for a visit with a hip-hop DJ who was part of the new Cuban vision that drummer Yeezy Garcia just spoke of. In fact, Isnay Rodriguez is not only the DJ in Yeezy's group Banda Ancha, but he also goes by DJ Higüey, and is a very popular and very busy member of the Cuban hip-hop scene. But before we go upstairs to talk to him about music, let's take a moment to take in the street scene here in Central Havana. DJ Higüey fills us in on what's going on the street right in front of his upstairs flat.
Estamos en Centro Havana.
We are in Centro Havana, which is a neighborhood full of life. It's made up largely of people who have come to the capital from the provinces in search of their dreams and to realize their goals. It's a very popular barrio. The people are always hanging out in the street because many people live in these very small spaces, which in the summer are not cool places to be, literally. So you see people in the street talking, kids playing soccer, neighbors taking it all in from the balconies of their homes. It's very alive. Not like other parts of Havana, where you never see anyone on the streets. That's why I continue to live here. The energy of the barrio inspires me.
A short climb up to his flat leads to a small dance studio where he oversees Afro-Cuban dance classes, as well as his Estudio Casero, another small MacBook workstation where he produces various hip-hop artists from around the island.
Este tema se llama Funny Evolution. Y tiene una, es como una fusión de cha-cha-cha con hip-hop, con música rap.
Hip-hop arrived in Cuba from the U.S. just about the same time when the Soviet Union collapsed. In the early 1990s, the island nation had to find its way without the support of its main economic sponsor, a period that many Cubans referred to as La Crisis, or the special period. Life became very tough for a majority of Cubans as they dealt with things like food and medicine shortages. Cuban hip-hop was born amidst those changes. And as in so many other parts of the world, hip-hop in Cuba provided an entire generation with an outlet to express frustrations about those changes. And DJ Higüey sees a parallel with what's going on in 2016.
Ahora mismo en el 2016,
right now, in 2016, Cuba is going through a process of change, economic change, cultural changes, political and social changes, the kind of changes that could never have happened in the 90s, which were marked by economic crisis. There can still be tough economic and cultural challenges now, but even the potential of change is influencing people in rap today.
Cuban hip-hop is not exactly part of the mainstream, but it is certainly no longer frowned upon by the government as it once was. And from his small second-floor studio, DJ Higüey and the artists he worked with are now the vanguards of change. And as we've seen with the other artists that we've talked to in this show, the agent for change is now and has always been the long history of musical exchanges between the U.S. and Cuba, something that geopolitics just couldn't ever stamp out.
The blockade couldn't stop that musical exchange. A friend of mine picked up a VHS of some rap from the U.S. It was the first time we saw Public Enemy. The blockade didn't stop that, and we are all now a continuation of that history of interchange, and it's never going to stop. We Cubans will continue to receive North American culture, and it will flow the other way as well. It is a rich and interesting process, and rap is definitely a part of that process.
This is one of the bands that DJ Higüey is working with. It's called Golpe Seco, and the lyrics are about everyday life in Cuba, but like all great art, its message is universal. Thank you for listening to this special edition of Alt Latino from Havana. We want to remind you the music heard on today's show can be heard on our website at npr.org/altlatino. This week, check out a special photo gallery from Havana on Facebook and Twitter. We are NPR's Alt Latino. From Havana, Cuba, I'm Felix Contreras. This has been Alt Latino.